So where did you get started? Like, you're from Ukraine, but did you go to school there?
No, I left Ukraine when I was 17, so I came here for education, to
Okay.
the college, graduate school, and then I stayed.
Okay, where'd you go to college at?
Mount Holyoke College.
Okay.
It's a small liberal arts school.
All right. What'd you study there?
Biochemistry, and then switched to immunology in graduate school.
Immunology.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's immunology. I mean, that makes me think of, we hear this. It's very popular nowadays to say that if you're vaccinated, you're immunized. Is it the same thing? Is vaccination the same thing as immunization, or?
Well, it depends. These terms are used very differently in academic immunology than the way lay people use it.
Okay.
So the term immunization means something is injected into your body and that stimulates antibody production. So the process of stimulating antibody production is immunization.
Okay.
Now, vaccination is done not so much for the purposes of antibody production, although that's the part of it, but for the purposes of protecting from disease. So we need to ensure that whatever antibodies that are there, they're actually protective and not just any kinds of antibodies.
Okay. So let's look at it. I know the one of the vaccines that you're going to be speaking about here is the DPT, right, or DTaP.
Both. I will be
Right.
speaking about both.
So talk about what is the vaccine? What's the purpose? Is it effective at preventing the diseases?
Well, so there are three components to it, and probably we are talking about pertussis here, right?
Pertussis? Sure.
Pertussis, yeah, that's part of the intention of the vaccine of both DTP, the old one, and DTaP, the new one,
What's
is
the
to
difference
protect.
between the DTaP and the DPT?
Okay, so DTP is whole cell pertussis.
Okay.
It includes whole cell pertussis component. Whereas DTaP, there is a little A in there. It stands for acellular pertussis.
Okay.
So instead of including the whole pertussis bacterium in there, they isolate certain proteins
Okay.
from the surface of the bacterium as well as pertussis toxin, and that becomes the vaccine.
Okay. So the DTaP is the new one.
The DTaP is a relatively new one. It was developed in Japan in the 80s when it was noticed that DTaP, the old one, is giving problems. It's reactogenic and sometimes results in death. And in Japan, interestingly, only after two cases of death were reported after DTaP, it was pulled. And then Japanese researchers developed DTaP.
Okay, so there literally have been people that have been killed by the DPT vaccine, the old
Right,
one.
obviously. And it just depends how you judge whether that event is coincidental or causal. It's up to each government and each regulatory agency to determine and make a decision
Okay.
and action upon that.
Okay. So talk about the current vaccine, the DTaP vaccine.
Yeah.
How safe and effective is it at preventing those diseases?
So if you start on the level of safety first, that's what I'm looking into it. And the thing is that they did really good job in making this vaccine safer than the old one in Japan. And they do it by monitoring endotoxin levels in vaccines very strictly. So they have certain requirements that endotoxin level in vaccines have to be under certain limit. In the United States, however, these limits are applied only to drugs and not to vaccines. So in terms of vaccines, we have absolutely no idea what's going on in American vaccines or European vaccines with the levels of endotoxin.
What
And
are
what is
endotoxins?
endotoxin? So endotoxin comes from a bacteria, from certain types of bacteria called gram-negative bacteria. Pertussis is one of the gram-negative bacteria. So naturally, pertussis has endotoxin on its surface. Now, the problem is that endotoxin is very reactogenic, and that's what was hypothesized was the problem with the old whole cell vaccine.
Okay.
So it is imperative to remove that as much as possible from the new vaccine. However, recently, as recent as 2012, Japanese researchers did investigation and comparison of vaccines that are produced in Japan using their own very stringent standards and vaccines that are produced abroad and imported to Japan. And they found that the acellular pertussis vaccines that are produced abroad have as much endotoxin as the old whole cell vaccine. And this is not really picked up by any tests abroad, and only in Japan they can distinguish that.
Wow. So basically what you just said, if I understand it correctly, is that the Japanese tested the new vaccine, which they have made cleaner, less endotoxins, but because of the fact that we are not, in the United States and Europe, not measuring that level of endotoxins, that the new one for us is still as toxic as the old one was before they changed because people had died from it.
So it's not clear what vaccine industry is doing about measuring the endotoxin. It's just there are no regulations. And so vaccines are exempt from those regulations that drugs have. And it's a shot in the dark, really. A batch can differ from another batch. And so some batches could be hot lots, so to speak.
What is a hot lot?
Hot lot meaning the ones that are causing reactions. And you would never know which batch you would get and which one is actually contaminated with.
That's interesting because I just saw a documentary about a man that was thrown in jail in the United States in 1996 for shaking his baby. And he did 8 years in jail. And then they later released him because they determined that his baby had been injected with a hot lot. They called it a hot vaccine lot. And so, and I think there were six or seven other children that died from that lot. So what makes the lots differ to where some might be more deadly than others?
So it depends how vaccine is purified. So originally, they grow bacteria and then they purify components from that bacteria. But endotoxin is very sticky and it could still stick to those components. Okay. And so it would really depend on batch per batch basis.
Okay.
It's unpredictable.
So you never know.
You never know, and every single lot needs to be tested for endotoxin to really know what's going on. And if it exceeds certain level, it has to be discarded. And I think that's what's going on in Japan. They really bring it down. But there are no regulations in the United States.
Wow. So we're not testing for the endotoxin levels, which could turn a vaccine batch into a hot lot that could be very, very damaging.
We are not testing it. I think it's the government, the companies that have to do it. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have their internal specifications, but they're not letting us know what they are. Mm. And batches are not labeled with what amount of endotoxin they have.
Wow. Wow. What do you think about the... I think it was a couple years ago, California passed a law that mandates vaccines. What's your opinion on mandatory vaccines?
Well, it's absolutely impossible. I mean, it's absolutely inhumane to do that, especially because vaccine safety is not established for 100% of people, and it's always a Russian roulette who is going to be damaged and who is not. And so parents need to have a choice whether they are willing to take risks or not, and it has to be up to them. And if they're not willing to take risks with vaccines, they can go with other ways of protecting their children from complications from diseases.
Okay, so a couple questions I have from that statement. Number one, if they're not willing to take the risks, right? We don't even know what the risks are. If the vaccines aren't tested properly, we don't even know the risks of that vaccine because if it's a hot lot, the risks are huge.
Huge.
But if it's not, then it's not as great of a risk, but we don't even know.
Yeah, and that cannot be even determined from preclinical studies because lots that are used in preclinical studies would be very different from the ones that are in production. So whatever testing is done, pre-licensure may not even apply to specific lot that you're receiving.
Wow. So there's really not any informed consent at that point because we don't even know the risks.
Well, I guess the informed consent is about that there are risks and they are unpredictable.
There are risks and we don't know what they are.
Yeah.
So you mentioned there's other ways that parents can protect their children. What are some alternatives if parents don't want to get their children vaccinated? What are other ways to build their bodies?
So we have the immune system to do that, and that's why we were given the immune system. And for right now we think that the whole reason the immune system exists is to be stimulated by vaccines, produce antibodies, and there is no really other purpose to it. But the truth is the immune system preceded vaccine development by a few million years. So what is it there for? And it's about having those innate pathways that provide antiviral defense, antibacterial defense. And also there are ways in which nutrition can strengthen those pathways. Actually, certain vitamins are absolutely required for those pathways to work. And so if we pay attention to nutrition and our lifestyle and we ensure that those pathways are working properly, we still have infections. It will not shield us from infections per mm-hmm. se, but those infections will go smoothly. The immune system will resolve them in due time and we won't have any complications or deaths resulting from those infections.
Wow. So really the key is you mentioned certain vitamins stimulate those pathways, is to get nutrition into your body so your immune system functions and it fends off disease.
Yes.
Right. What are the vitamins that people could take that you mentioned about specifically?
So it's not about so much taking vitamins, but having your body sufficient on all those vitamins. It doesn't have to be a synthetic pill. It can come from nutrition, and this is how we were deriving our nutrition for so many thousands, if not millions of years of evolution. So the immune system knows how to work with what was available naturally. It didn't have to wait until nutraceutical industry shows up in the last 50 years to make sure that the immune system works. So the nutrients that we must pay attention as far as viral diseases are concerned are vitamin A and vitamin C. For antibacterial ones, vitamin D is very important, as well as gut health, meaning probiotics, because that helps utilize the vitamin D, and they work synergistically.
Okay.
Now, actually, it's kind of silly to talk about each vitamin separately, because once you go through the list, you see that all of them are necessary one way or another. And it's not only those vitamins, like the alphabetic list of vitamins, but also microelements, minerals, phytonutrients, pretty much everything in between, the whole gamut of nutrition and lifestyle.
So what foods are best to get these nutritional elements to our bodies?
So it depends where you live. For example, if you live in tropical country, you'll have tons of vitamin D from the sunshine, and you don't really need that. But if you are Alaska native, and there is polar winter half of the year, then you really need to rely on foods that are high in vitamin D, and that has been part of their traditional diets for such a long time, including
the
fermented kish, fish, and cod liver oil, and all of that. So depending where you live, you could afford to be vegan, or you would have to really follow the native diets.
Right, right. And believe it or not, I mean, I've looked at the natives in Alaska and the diets that they eat, and you would think that they would be really unhealthy, but they're not. They're actually pretty healthy for eating diets that are high fat, lots of oils. They eat a lot of seal blubber. I mean, it doesn't look like a diet that I used to would think was healthy, but for them it works. So you do what you have to where you live.
Yeah, and there is really good research from Weston Price. He compared Alaska natives who were on their primitive diets versus those who adopted Western diets, which would include sugar, coffee, white flour, and the level of health was very different. Mm. So on the native diets, they were thriving and they were healthy. Once they adopted Western diet, their health would really suffer, and they would be really affected by TB, for example. Mm. Which again, TB needs a lot of vitamin D to be held at bay. And so once you change your diet, and that's no longer the case, especially in their territory, that turned out to be detrimental.
Wow. So really, the key is to keep your body at optimal levels with nutrition so that it can fend off TB or other diseases, right? And so the key is you're an immunologist, right?
Yeah.
So you understand the immune system. And so you just mentioned sugar. So is that something that we should be aware of in regards to its effect on the immune system if
you
want to stay healthy?
Absolutely. So sugar has a very clear effect on a subset of cells called neutrophils. Neutrophils are cells that guard us from bacterial infections. And so they go through the body, and if they detect bacteria where bacteria are not supposed to be, they engulf bacteria, and this process is called phagocytosis. Now, when a sugar feed is given to people, it has been shown that reduces phagocytosis by neutrophils by twofold, and that effect lasts for 5 hours.
Wow.
So if you are eating a lot of sugar every 5 hours, your neutrophils are not functioning properly. And you may get away with the physiological effects of that if there is no infection going on at the moment. But if that happens while you're already sick and you keep eating sugar in the form of ice cream or whatever, then you really risk developing or putting yourself at higher risk of your neutrophils will not be able to handle the infection.
Okay.
And also, when people are diabetic and they are not controlling their sugar is always high in the blood, and they're the ones whose neutrophils are really performing poorly.
So the neutrophils, in this case, that's the part of the immune system that the sugar affects, and it depresses neutrophil function by 50% for 5 hours.
Yes.
So if you're eating a diet that's high in sugar, I mean, it's possible that your neutrophil activity has been decreased by 50% for a long, long time.
For a long time.
If you're eating it all the time.
Yeah.
So that's not really, if you want to keep your immune system strong so that it can fend off these diseases without vaccines, really the diet's key, and eliminating sugar would be the first step, wouldn't it?
That would be a first step. And for babies who are most likely to be affected by bacterial diseases, breastfeeding is what really fends off those infections. For example, in Sweden, it has been shown that the risk of meningitis, HIB meningitis, was down fourfold in exclusively breastfed babies.
Wow.
And the whole reason why meningitis even rose was because of the switch from breastfeeding to formula feeding that happened in the second half of the 20th century.
Really?
Yes.
That's amazing. And so in light of that, I didn't know that statistic, but it seems to me crazy then if you, at a hospital, it seems like they should keep the baby breastfeeding as long as possible, but I've not seen that as my experience with our children, is they try to get them on formula as soon as they can.
Well, that's not really a good thing to do.
It's not a good thing, is it? Wow.
I think it is, the idea is that breast milk is just nutrition, and I think the establishment is not really understanding the immunological importance of breastfeeding and not paying attention to that, not encouraging women to breastfeed long enough. And so we are reaping the consequences of that.
Yeah, and also when the baby is initially born, there's the film on the body. Isn't that good? I mean, isn't that part of, from what I've read, that's part of the immune system, or that's the nutrients that are on that film on the baby, they are absorbing through their skin to help build immunity. But we wipe it off as soon as they're born. And so that doesn't make sense to me in light of that research either.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that
part. Yeah.
But that's something to look into.
Sure. So the baby needs to be breastfed as long as possible because that's building the immune system. And then in the case that you just talked about, the decrease of, fourfold decrease of meningitis?
Yeah.
Okay, just from being breastfed.
Yeah. And, instead of reverting meningitis by introducing breastfeeding or by encouraging breastfeeding, they introduced the vaccine for it.
Okay.
So even though HIB meningitis in infancy is the problem of under breastfeeding, the solution was not really to reverse that naturally, but get the pharmaceutical product for it.
Okay. Why do you think that is?
Why? I guess there is no money in encouraging anyone to breastfeed, but there's a lot of money in making vaccine.
Mm. How does that make you feel about the industry? these things that seem to be basic, we're not being told about this, and people are getting sick because they don't have this knowledge. Mm.
So without that knowledge, we don't feel empowered. We are pretty much dependent on these pharmaceutical products from the beginning of our life to the end. And something so simple as breastfeeding, nutrition, lifestyle choices that we can implement, staying away from sugar and knowing the importance of it, it's empowering.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's something, if you were to tell the people that are watching this documentary, you know, what do you need to know? What do they need to know about how to stay healthy if they choose not to vaccinate? What's your message?
So they have to really follow Mother Nature and make sure that all the mechanisms that Mother Nature put into their bodies are functional. And how do they know that? Well, you don't really need to get a PhD in immunology to know that. You just follow what your ancestor did for many centuries, the diets, their traditional diets that they were on and that they were thriving. Mm-hmm. And really there isn't much analytical thinking to do. You just have to eat healthy and stay fit.
It does make sense, doesn't it? Because we see example after example of people that were healthy in their indigenous environment, eating what they'd always eaten. And then they move to the United States and they start eating what we eat here and they get sick. I mean, it happens all the time. That's what that's kind of the standard that we see now. That is what happens when people move away from eating what they've always eaten, eating natural foods, into eating the processed junk.
Yeah, and when you switch to processed junk, of course, the risk for chronic diseases go up. But it's also for infectious diseases. And I guess here this risk is a little bit masked by the fact that we've brought many of these exposures down to a very low number. So, but really, there was another way to do that. There was a way to let the infections happen and instead work on the immune system so that you eliminate mortality or complications from those infections rather than reduce the exposure.
Right. I mean, so when I was a kid, I'm 48. So back when I was a kid, we had chickenpox parties where if a kid got chickenpox, all the parents would take the kids to get exposed because they'd get chickenpox and they'd be itchy for a few days and then they'd had it and would never get it again, wouldn't have to worry about shingles or anything like that. But now it seems like we don't place any importance on the value of being exposed and letting the immune system defend us from that, because that creates a lifetime immunity, doesn't it?
Well, in addition to lifetime immunity, it also creates other benefits. And so we now have research where exposure to chickenpox, history of chickenpox, is associated with reduced risk of brain cancers, glioma. Mm. The same goes for mumps and ovarian cancers, and also any type of childhood disease and reduced risk of blood cancers.
Mm. But now, is it the same, though? Let's say that we got the chickenpox vaccine, right? Is that the same as being exposed to chickenpox naturally?
So there are reasons why it might not be the same. They tested antibody or immune response that is generated by natural infection, natural chickenpox infection versus chickenpox vaccine, and they can really distinguish between the two. So the vaccine response has a limited range of antibodies that are produced. And right now it is not really clear what exactly protects or reduces the risk of glioma from the chickenpox infection. Could it be some type of antibody? And because the vaccination versus natural infections are not equivalent, we cannot be confident that vaccination is actually going to be protective. Okay. With mumps, however, it is clear that it will not be protective. Okay. Because the way protection works after mumps infection, and I mean protection against ovarian cancer, is that when mumps infection happens and you have swollen glands, mm-hmm. There is a protein that's expressed on those glands, which is new. It has never been expressed before. And so the immune system recognizes this protein as foreign and starts immune response against it. Now, then after infection goes away and this protein is no longer present, but antibodies still remain. And then ovarian cancer expresses exactly the same protein. Uh-huh. So the immune system is already primed to recognize it.
Okay, but that's on a natural response. That's not from the vaccine,
yes,
from the NMR.
Because the vaccine doesn't induce swollen glands.
So it's possible then to create, the vaccines are apparently not going to produce lifetime immunity, because you have to have boosters. They're not going to provide protection against these different types of cancers, as you just said. But it's possible that the vaccines could at least be produced less in a less toxic fashion, right? I mean, if we measured for endotoxins, if we, like some of the ingredients that are in vaccines that are toxic, what couldn't we replace them with less toxic ingredients and still get the effect?
I would say, first of all, we have to monitor contamination. And so I said that one problem is contamination with endotoxin that comes from bacterial vaccines or toxoid vaccines such as DTaP. But another problem is DNA contamination. Okay. And that one comes from vaccines that are grown in human tissues or human cells. And so the two that are that fall into that category are rubella vaccine and chickenpox. Okay. Now, the thing is that we don't have single vaccines. MMR is one vaccine, and it has measles virus and also DNA contamination from rubella portion of that of the other component. Mm-hmm. And so DNA is actually an adjuvant in itself, and it induces a type of immune response which we call Th2, which does not elicit T killer cells. And why is that important? T killer cells are the cells that eliminate virally infected cells. Now, MMR is a live vaccine, so there will be some viral replication and some infection of cells from the vaccine. Now, if you mix DNA into that vaccine, the response that will be elicited will not be the proper one. It will be the one that is mismatched to deal with the live virus. Mm. And that can create a problem that the virus will not be eliminated. And so vaccine virus can stay in the body for much longer than what it intended to be.
Mm. And that's the MMR vaccine.
That's with the MMR vaccine. And that problem would not be in a single measles vaccine because there is no DNA from humans in the single measles vaccine. It is grown in eggs. But when they put so many vaccines together, they carry over this contamination.
I see. So, one way to make them less toxic would be to spread them out and make them separate.
And make them separate and monitor contamination.
Okay. Why do you think that's not happening? It's more convenient to combine them into one?
I think it's more convenient. And also, for example, some people or some parents might decide that it's really worth for them to do the measles vaccine and not so much the rubella vaccine. But if you have everything in three, then you're pretty much forced to do the rubella as well.
Right. Yeah, because I don't know the last time I heard about rubella here in this country being an outbreak of rubella.
Usually rubella happens, usually rubella is dangerous when it happens during pregnancy.
Okay.
So it's important that women, or in the past that women would get immune from rubella by going through rubella during their childhood so that by the time they are mothers, they don't have to deal with the rubella infections. They wouldn't have any risk for it. So in a way, rubella parties would be great to get everyone immune to this really mild disease.
Right.
But again, instead of doing that, instead of doing this self-empowering kind of method of getting over with rubella, instead it was decided to eliminate it. And for that, you need to vaccinate both females and males.
Wow.
And males have absolutely no benefit from rubella vaccination for themselves, since there are really no risks from that.
Wow. So the males, rubella vaccine is useless for males?
Well, it's not beneficial because the only time when rubella is dangerous, as I said, it's during pregnancy.
Other than that, it's just a rash?
Yes.
Okay. So it doesn't make any sense at all then to have the boys have an MMR vaccine. They should just have maybe the MM.
They
but no
probably.
Rubella.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, it seems ludicrous to me that we have boys taking the Gardasil vaccine, boys taking the MMR vaccine when the rubella doesn't pose a risk. But, I mean, we see that, though. We see that today that sometimes, I think one of the questions maybe we should ask is the vaccine necessary?
Absolutely.
Not just is it safe and effective, but is it necessary, right? Could you elaborate on that? Are the vaccines necessary? Are there certain vaccines that are necessary? Or what's your take on that?
Well, once you start analyzing one vaccine after another, you will see that they either not necessary or not. They do not guarantee always to be protective, or they are very harmful. So there is not a single vaccine that I could find and put my finger on and say that it's necessary, safe, and effective. There is none.
There's none?
There is none.
Wow. Well, I'm glad to get your take on vaccines, because as an immunologist, you know, you have a different perspective and a very valuable perspective, I will add to that, on these vaccines, because you understand the importance, really, of our own innate immunity as opposed to trying to inject immunity through a needle, right?
Yeah.
Because it really, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it really is not the same thing to gather immunity naturally versus through a needle.
Yes, and I actually experienced that on myself because I had two measles vaccines and I still got measles later on. So for me, it was a bit shocking. I thought that after vaccines, as the theory says, that we get lifelong immunity, it wasn't the case for me, and it's not the case for many other people who may not even realize that.
Mm. So you got the vaccine twice and you still got the measles?
Yes.
Okay. You know, I got the I don't know if it was the MMR, but I do remember that I got vaccinated for measles and mumps, and I got both of those as a kid.
Wow.
even after the vaccine, so it didn't work for me either, apparently. I never got a chickenpox vaccine. I don't know if they even had it back when I was a kid.
No, they did.
But I did get chickenpox, so I guess I don't have to worry as much about shingles.
No, actually you do, because in order to prevent shingles, you need constant re-exposure from chickenpox.
Oh, really?
Which is no longer the case.
Okay.
So you have to worry about shingles.
Okay, because yes. I thought that if you had chickenpox that you naturally that you would not have to worry about shingles, but that's not true.
Not true.
Okay.
So if you keep getting re-exposed to chickenpox, the shingles will stay down.
I see. So maybe what we're seeing with this increase in shingles is the fact that we're not doing the chickenpox parties anymore.
Yeah.
So people aren't exposed to the natural virus and their immune system's not working
exactly
constantly like it needed
exactly
to. Okay, interesting.